SMQBs, episode 155, March Madness is upon us. But we've got one QB here on borrowed time and one coming in late. So Pope, give us your who you're sitting down at the bar with this week before you have to leave.
I am sitting down with one Dr. Charles McClellan. Y'all know who he is?
Yeah.
He is the chair of the NCAA selection tournament selection committee. And I would probably lead off with what the fuck happened with all these Big East teams that we expected to see. Surely not every one of their bubbles was burst by some of these bid stealers. And how do you have six Mountain West teams in twice as many as Big East? And I'm not the biggest Big East fan. I think they play great basketball. Obviously, they have national championship teams. But I just don't see how you could justify only three teams out of the Big East. So I'm talking to him, and I'm interested in how did they make their final decisions on who got in and who got out.
Rooster, who you bringing?
I think I'd like to have a drink with Jay Billis. Two reasons. I think he's really good at analyzing the bracket and pretty insightful. He's a really smart guy. And secondly, he had one of the funniest appearances on a sports podcast I've heard in a very long time last week when he appeared on the Barstool Sports, pardon my take, show. And just eviscerated these guys for being stupid. And it was just hilarious. One of them accused him of being disingenuous about something. And he said, "You don't even know what that word means." And the guys eventually had to look it up. He said, "See, you just had to look it up. Don't call me disingenuous if you don't know what it means. You just had to look it up." And then he said, "I knew what that word meant in high school." just made these guys look like total idiots. It was hilarious. So anyway, I'd like to pat him on the back for that, because I always feel dumber after listening to that show.
I missed that guy. All right, I missed that. I'll look it up. House, what do you got? Who are you bringing with you?
I've studied all of the film of the 68 teams that are going to be playing in the NCAA tournament, and I would like to have a drink at the bar with Kaisei Tominaga. He is who is going to be everyone's favorite player from Nebraska. He is the Japanese Steph Curry. I'm going to have a little glass of sake with Kaisei Tominaga.
Is he from Japan?
All right.
He's from Japan. He's the Japanese right. Steph Curry. Watch, right. Look for him.
All right.
All right. I'm bringing Don Munson to have a drink.
Oh, yeah.
That's a great
one.
That's
a good
Don
one.
Don is the coach of Long Beach State. He was fired from his job just before the tournament, but they said, "Yeah, go ahead and play out your tournament, the conference tournament with the team." And they went from being the four seed to winning the tournament. And he still is the, I guess, current but former coach as they go into the NCAA tournament this week. So that's where he's playing in the, I guess they're in the West, and they are the 15 seed squaring off against Arizona on Thursday, and we'll have to see if I'd be really curious to know how he feels and what some of his locker room speeches have been over the last couple of days.
Do you remember who he is?
Well, you know,
he's the guy who put Gonzaga on the map.
Yeah,
25 years ago.
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
Yeah,
yeah. Mark Few was his assistant.
Wow.
You know, the administration said that they had contemplated that he might make a run and make it to the tournament, and that did not change in any way their decision to to fire him.
Well, that's bizarre. That was pretty stupid. So,
yeah.
Anyway, all right, guys, we got to jump into it. It's March Madness. The brackets are out. So let's go right to it. the East. Rooster, you're going to take us through and let us know what you think about the East. And this is not gambling advice. Anybody who's listened to us for all 154 prior episodes know that you should basically take what we tell you to do and do the opposite. That's the best way to make money. But with that caveat, Rooster, jump into it.
To me, the East looks like the strongest region of the four, led off by repeat or soon to be repeat national Ooh. Champion UConn.
Wow.
Look, we got four number one seeds and three of them were upset in their conference championship tournaments, right? Carolina got beaten pretty handily by North Carolina State. Purdue lost in overtime to Wisconsin. And Iowa State just crunched Houston 69-41. UConn was the only one that held serve, beating Marquette 73-57. I think UConn's the number one seed, period, for a good reason. It's a tough racket, though, because Iowa State's in it. And, you know, they just beat the crap out of Houston. They've got a tremendous defense. Illinois has, of late, the number one offense in the country. They're the third seed. And Auburn is on the list that House circulated earlier today from Ken Palm Analytics, of a team that is in the top 25 in both offense and defensive efficiency. Auburn's one of a few teams this year on that list. They won the SEC championship. So between UConn, Auburn, Illinois, Iowa State, I think that's a really tough region. And then you throw in San Diego State and FAU, which always do well in March, especially FAU when they're playing in New York, it seems. That's a tough region.
Well, they were both in the Final Four last year.
Yeah. Yep. I've got UConn coming out of that region, beating, you're not going to like this, Pope, Baylor, moving on to the championship against Houston, which beats Creighton to get there. So my final four teams are UConn, Baylor, Creighton, and Houston.
Milk.
Yo, Milk.
Boys.
All right.
Welcome to March.
Milk, we were just talking about UConn being the first team since your team, Florida, to repeat.
That's right, baby.
Yep.
Rooster, you got any good storylines we should be looking at out of that bracket?
Well, other than a repeat national champion since the 1990s, no.
I think Florida Atlantic, UConn, assuming that Florida Atlantic wins their first game in the Northwestern, second game, that should be interesting. I think UConn wins, but I'm not sure that's who they want to have to play, a Final Four participant from last year in the second round. It's unusual.
Yale-Auburn could be a fun game if the refs call fouls on Auburn, which could be on every play because Auburn is foul happy. I think that would be a entertaining situation if Yale could hang in on that game.
I think the real storyline is that, as Rooster pointed out, you've got UConn facing the gauntlet of three tournament champions. I mean, obviously they can't possibly play them all, but the fact that Auburn won the SEC, Iowa State won the Big 12, and Illinois won the Big 10, which are arguably right now the best conferences outside of, you know, UConn's number one status. It's pretty crazy to think that the number one overall seed has to face the tournament champions of all three of those conferences. That alone is a huge storyline.
Not only that, but how about if you're Auburn and you win the SEC and you get seeded four when Kentucky is seeded three in another easier region? Why did Auburn get screwed like that?
Auburn really got screwed here, and they're playing great. And I think literally in the tournament, UConn, one of UConn's toughest foes it could face is Auburn. I think if they beat Auburn, they win it all. But I do think Auburn could beat UConn Yeah. Over there.
A good game. Another good game.
Watch the UAB game.
Good game in that region will be Drake versus Washington State. This is Washington State's first time since like 2008. And Drake has won over 25 games or more in the last 4 years without anyone really noticing. They're a pretty good team. So that could be a good game. What are they? Washington State, 7th seed. Drake, 10th seed.
All right, I assume you guys already talked about Iowa State.
Let's hear from Pope before he runs.
Yeah.
Pope.
I'm going to run. I'll just give you I'm not going to break down all the brackets, but so my final four I've got is, I know it's going to be no surprise to you, the North Carolina Tar Heels coming out of the West, playing UConn in the semis, and then you got the SEC border clash, Tennessee-Kentucky. I've been high on Kentucky all year. I still think their ceiling is a national championship, but they're not going to get it this year because North Carolina will beat Kentucky in an epic final game to win the Natty 2024. Pope out.
Shocking.
Keep dreaming, Pope.
Oh, my God.
All right.
Wow.
Good stuff. All right. Boy, I was glad that in his 5 minutes, he didn't go through the entire.
Yeah, he was actually thinking about doing the whole thing, wasn't he?
I think he was.
I'm going to miss him.
All right. Well, Milk, since you just got here, we'll skip over the South and go to the Midwest for House right now, and then we'll get to you. But House, take us through the Midwest.
You know, the Midwest is the region of the limpers. Those teams that have been limping in and limping, frankly, all year. There's just none that you're screaming about. I mean, Purdue, in consecutive years, they've lost to a 13, a 14, and a 15. They just got to survive the first round, let alone get far in this tournament. It's amazing how many of the pundits I've seen have Purdue as an auto lock. They've demonstrated nothing with Zach Edey as their center over the last few years that indicates that they're going to be a Final Four team. Still, they have a pretty easy region. Kansas, who they would face in the Elite Eight, has been decimated by injury. It's still a question whether or not Dickinson and McCullough play. They're both dealing with nagging injuries. They have been playing poorly of late. Other than Virginia, I think a relative top team from a top conference limping into the tournament is Kansas. Tennessee.
I think Purdue would face Kansas in the Sweet 16.
The Sweet 16.
Yeah, and then they'd have to get by Tennessee or Creighton or one of those other teams.
Yeah, you're right, in the Sweet 16. And, you know, none of them are really thrilling me. In fact, Samford is going to give Kansas all kinds of fits. In the 13-4 opening round game, I think Samford's going to give Kansas all kinds of fits and would not surprise a number of folks if Samford brings that upset on. And
Kansas is 4-6 in their last 10, 1-4 away from home.
Gonzaga is not the Gonzaga that we're accustomed to. They struggled in their own conference this year. They struggled in out-of-conference play. I think they're overseeded here as a number 5 seed. I like the bottom of this region. I like Creighton and I like Tennessee. I really, really like Creighton's. I like Shireman. I like their center. They are battle tested. If I have it right, in this calendar year since 2024, Creighton is the only team to have beaten UConn. So they've beaten the very best. And I like Creighton to come out of the Midwest. I think the Utah State TCU 8-9 matchup is going to be very entertaining. On the 12-5 side, look, there's a lot of folks that we're going to, we in if we, as we go across the regions, you could make a really good argument for the 12 in every single region. And McNeese is one of the few teams in the entire country that has 30 wins. McNeese also probably has one of the weakest schedules in the entire.
I was going to say, Toby, because I was going to raise that. I mean, their schedule is, I mean, it's their strength of schedule was 288.
Yeah.
Did you even know there were that many teams?
That said, they did beat, I think, both VCU and Michigan on the road. Now, I know Michigan stinks this year, but it's still a Big Ten competition, which is a big step up from whatever schlocky conference McNeese is in, whether it's the MEAC or the SWAC or whatever it is. MEAC, I guess, whatever. I just don't think McNeese has what it takes to beat Gonzaga, even though Gonzaga is down this year. It's a pretender 30 win team. In this bracket, I like a potential upset of TCU over Purdue. I like a potential upset of Oregon over South Carolina. Oregon is hot right now, but ultimately for me, I see Creighton coming out of the Midwest. If you're asking for my Final Four, I think we're only going to see one single one seed make the Final Four this year, and I think that's going to be Houston. I think Auburn's going to pull off the upset of UConn. I think it's going to be Auburn, Houston, Creighton, and Arizona.
You guys are getting too much
credit. All right. Milk?
Too much credit to Auburn, you said, Milk?
No.
I think too much credit to Auburn. I know they won the SEC championship game, but I don't know.
They look pretty good. They looked.
We lost our center. Good.
I know.
Yeah, early in the game, too. Early in the game.
Yeah. I don't know.
I'll tell you who looked good was NC State.
Well, let's get to the South. Let's talk about them.
Let's do it. Let's do the South.
We've got the Houston. This is a tough bracket, guy, or tough section. Houston, Marquette, Kentucky, and Duke, your top four seeds, two blue bloods. But I'll tell you what, the highlight I think is going to be, this is a star-studded field for guard play. Jamal Sheed is kind of, everyone knows him at Houston. If you haven't seen, now he's been hurt the last couple of weeks, so this is going to be huge for Marquette, but Tyler Kolek is one of the better guards in the country. Kentucky is loaded with guards and Reeves. Reed Shepard is, you know, one of the best three-point shooters in the country. Dillingham. I mean, look, even the Gators have really good guards. Clayton, Tyree Samuel, who was your Seton Hall transfer, Toby. But no one is talking about House's favorite guard, the man from Japan, out of Nebraska, Kaisi Tamanaga.
That's who I was having a drink with at the bar.
I came in late. This guy is my favorite. I did a little research. Apparently, he's insane. He just throws up three-pointers left and right. So this is going to be, honestly, I have this marked as one of the more, the A&M game in Nebraska is one of the more exciting games to watch. A&M, very hot team, should have beaten Florida in the SEC championship game to go to the finals. They blew a 20-point first-half lead. But that's one to mark down. The 5-12 in this bracket, has Wisconsin very inconsistent this year against the team with the best record out of anyone in the NCAA tournament, JMU 31-3, I think. However, if you take a look, this is a very McNeese State situation. They literally have one decent JMU. They have
JMU 325th strength schedule.
Yeah. They beat Michigan State. That's it. Yeah, they're not even that good.
Meanwhile, Wisconsin just beat Purdue.
Yeah, I think, look, I don't see JMU beating Wisconsin. I think they'll overtake them.
They must have dusted off Frank the Tank.
That's right, baby. you've got the big hot team right now because they won the ACC, NC State. I think they left it all. And I think that their national championship was winning the ACC. I've got Texas Tech beating them in the first round. I think they're draining.
By the way, that story reminds me of Georgetown going on their run and winning the Big East a couple of years ago, and then getting hammered by Colorado in the first round. It's the same thing.
Totally see it. Totally see Texas Tech destroying them. Until yesterday, I had Florida as a sleeper, as you probably could. But I'm serious. That Florida is a very good team. Unfortunately, we lost our center to a very gruesome injury yesterday. Hopefully his career is not over. I think they're going to struggle. I think Colorado beats Boise State. House probably disagrees with me there, but I think Colorado gets in, plays Florida. I think Florida beats them, but can't get past Marquette. I think you're going to see a Marquette-Kentucky matchup. I love Houston and Kentucky here. I think the injury of Kolek, even if he plays, it's still undetermined if he's going to play for Marquette. But even if he does, he's playing 100%.
If he doesn't play, you beat them, Milk.
I think so. I think Florida can beat Marquette without him if he plays.
Without him, yeah.
But I don't even know if he's going to be 100%. I don't think they can get by Kentucky. I think Houston is too strong, too big underneath, too good on defense. I mean, they're one of the best defensive teams in the country. I think this gets down to Houston and Kentucky. I may say Marquette if Kolek is looking sharp in game one, but I think Houston's too strong, guys. It's hard to have them not come out of this bracket. So I've got Houston coming out as your South winner in the Final Four.
If Houston hadn't gotten waxed this weekend, nobody would be even questioning it, right?
I just don't. I love these tournaments. Okay, I love them. The ACC, that's fine. But let's not put too much faith in these teams that win it or in teams that go out early. Tennessee got waxed by Mississippi State in the SEC championship game. Don't tell me Tennessee sucks. Tennessee can win the national championship.
Well, don't you think that after all the bad losses Duke took this year in the ACC, that their ACC performance in the tournament proves that they suck? I mean, that was their chance to get hot for March Madness, and they blew it.
They were hot before the tournament, though. That's the thing. Duke has actually been pretty darn good over the last month.
Except for when they play UNC.
One of the problems with these blue bloods is they're now filled with a bunch of one-and-doners. And yes, sure, they've played 30, 35 games together over the year. That's a difference between some of these teams that find their chemistry after playing 30 games together in this season, but then two seasons before. Yeah. A lot of these teams that are from the mid-majors or the lower seeds, the reason that they can make their way to at least the Sweet 16 is because they have the type of tournament chemistry and backcourt play that you need to have to survive the first couple of games. And sometimes that just doesn't come together, even for you know, five-star players like Duke or Kentucky or UNC or Purdue or, you know, any of those teams. I think, you know, UConn had some players last year on that team that had been with the team more than just they weren't one. UConn wasn't one and doneers last year. That was part of their success.
Well, I think there's a lot less of that now with Nil anyway. I think the one and done teams are probably behind us. And as we move forward, we're going to see more teams that are kept together, at least that have transfers who have been playing big time. They may be one and done at one school. They're not going to be one and done in college.
How long is an NBA rookie contract?
3 years.
Anyone? 3 years?
Yeah.
So it's not quite there's not quite the urgency that there is to get into the NFL where you're not making much money for 5 years. If you see what I'm saying.
Plus these guys can make money now. They can make money now while they're in college. And for a guy who might not be a lottery pick, you know, stay in college and make a couple hundred dollars.
But my point is in the NFL, you're not going to make your money until the fifth year. And so you don't want to be too old by the time you get there.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
By the way, my wild upset pick is A&M over Houston. Just
wow. Whoa.
Throwing it out there. That's my wild upset pick.
They got to first get past Japanese Steph.
Are you going to put that on any of your brackets?
I cannot wait to watch this guy. He's I've heard him being described as reckless, by the way, which he's love.
He's got the headband. He wears number 30. It's great.
He might throw up like 10 half court shots, apparently, just for the hell of it. It's reckless. So, yeah, A&M over Houston. Wild upset.
But did you give your final four, Milk?
Yeah. What's your final four?
Well, obviously, I've got Houston coming out of the South. I have definitely Tennessee coming out of the Midwest. I really don't want to take North Carolina out of the West, but
yeah.
You know what? I'm going to change it. I'm going to take Baylor out of the
West. That's who I took.
I'm going to take Baylor, and at my East team, highly underrated. I don't know if you guys talked about them cause I came on late. I love Iowa State. Love them. Taking Iowa State out of the East as my final four. And I've got Houston winning this whole thing. So.
All right, Bison, you're up.
All right. So in the West, I think maybe these Cedars did okay in some ways because there's a lot of intriguing games all along here. Although I think they shift the bet a little bit this year, the selection committee. I got to just give it up for Howard Bison for a minute because they're in the tournament. I think it's the second straight year that they're in after like 29 years of not making it at all. And their reward for that is getting to play North Carolina in round one.
Could be worse. They could be playing Houston or UConn. I mean, the only thing better would
but
be
they got to get past Wagner. But you know, the thing about Howard that's interesting, by the way, is they've got a Harvard Ohio State guy, and then they've got another guy who transferred in. I can't remember where he came from, but they got a Maryland transfer too. So Howard's got a couple guys.
Wait, is the Harvard Ohio State guy the guy who's got like 8 years of eligibility that's played like for 8 years? Is he the one?
26.
Is it Steph Towns?
Yeah, I think he's 26 years old.
Yeah, he's 26.
So anyway, I mean, that's look, how I don't have Howard going anywhere. So I've already spent too much time on him, but just, you know, wanted to give the DC team a shout out since they're the only one there. So you got North Carolina, look, Michigan State, Mississippi State. I mean, Michigan State is one of those teams that, you know, it's Izzo. At the beginning of the year, they were thought to be one of the better teams in the country. They did just never really clicked and got it going. But that's a good game, Mississippi State, Michigan State. I mean, don't be surprised to see Michigan State come out of that. And then do you really want to play them if you're North Carolina? I mean, that's not who you want to play as a one seed, as a Tom Izzo team, right?
They have a huge chip on their shoulder because everybody's got their arrows directed at Michigan State as the team that blocked others from getting in. I think there's something like 20 spots below Seton Hall, that they're like one of the lowest ranked teams to ever make it as an at-large. They were like 49th and they got in as an 8 seed, not even as a 10 seed. They got in as an 8 seed.
Yeah. Well,
or 9 seed, so whatever.
But listen, I mean, again, you can't underestimate Izzo. That there's just something scary about that team in March. St. Mary's Grand Canyon. St. Mary's is actually a good team. I mean, they've got good wins. I know it's the 5-12 thing, and everybody wants to get excited about the 5-12. I just think St. Mary's is actually a legit team. That deserve a little respect, and I think they get past Grand Canyon there.
No way! Grand Canyon is good.
Bryce Drew coaching.
Grand Canyon is beating St. Mary's.
Bryce Drew, baby.
It could happen. Alabama, Charleston. Alabama's getting through that. New Mexico, Clemson. That look for that upset right there.
Yes,
Clemson,
I agree there.
I don't think Clemson wins that game. New Mexico comes through there. Baylor, Colgate. I mean, Colgate's a good team and a good program, but Baylor's just, you know, too tough and gets through there also. Nevada, Dayton's fun. I think Nevada's probably pulls that off. And then you got Arizona and Long Beach State, who we talked about. Unfortunately, I think the dream for Dan Monson comes to an end there as Arizona moves on. But all in all, in that bracket, you know, I think Arizona, North Carolina, you get the RJ, what's his name from North Carolina, the guard. Caleb Davis versus Arizona. Versus RJ Davis. They square off to come out of that region, I think. And I've actually got Arizona coming out, knocking North Carolina off. And I think North Carolina, they've got, you know, they could have to get through Michigan State. They could have to get through Alabama. I mean, that's for a one seed. They've got some tough games to worry about coming out of there. And I just think Arizona gets to the Final Four this year. And then for my Final Four, which I'm going to probably change this a bunch because this is the first time I looked at it while we were all talking here. But at least now I've got Iowa State versus Arizona. I've got Houston, Purdue, and I've got Arizona playing Purdue and Arizona winning it.
Arizona. Wow. The West to me seems like one of the shittiest regions.
Yep.
So I mean, College of Charleston can and may absolutely beat Alabama. They're probably the worst.
Alabama's
playing like absolute shit.
But Carolina, Alabama, Arizona, Baylor? I mean, you think that's a shit bracket?
I don't know. I don't trust any of those teams.
I got to say, overall, you know, you missed it at the beginning, Milk, and I'm curious your opinion here, too, for the ultimate selections and the selection committee. But, you know, Pope was having a drink with Charles McClellan. Boy, there's nothing like the pressure of that interview. The guy who comes on right after the selections are made, after, you know, a bunch of teams have been screwed. And he admitted this was the craziest, most bubble bursting weekend in the history of the brackets. I think at least five teams bubbles were burst, but I mean, six Mountain West teams and three Big East teams and Seton Hall and St. John's and Providence and Villanova all were left on the cutting room floor. And I think all of those teams can beat a number of these 10 seeds. I mean, the Boise State, Colorado. I mean, that was a surprise to me. The Virginia is a surprise to me.
Yeah.
Not seeing some of these selections. Really, I'm not seeing some of these selections.
Yeah. Virginia didn't even win in. They just got put in, I guess, based on strength of schedule or something. But
yeah.
There
were a lot of teams.
Go ahead.
Happens every year, right? I mean, I don't know. It's teams like NC State that are taking these spots from probably more deserving people.
Like yeah. Indiana well, State. But that's the fun of it. I mean, that's the fun
right.
Of it, you
exactly.
Know?
You know, exactly.
One of the fun things about the NCAA tournament is if you count the four major sports, plus, in particular, the NCAA tournament is the ones that really catches such a huge audience to watch sports. I don't think coaching means any more than in the NCAA tournament. These are a bunch of kids that have to adjust each and every time for a different matchup. And I think in this tournament, the combination, I mean, we always talk about guard play in the NCAA tournament, but the combination now that Golden State Warriors have changed both pro and college basketball forever. It's going to be coaching and three-point shooting, or the lack thereof, that is going to decide the tournament, in my view. So many of these teams, if you look at the number of three-pointers that they jack up, it's crazy. And it's feast or famine. If they're off on threes, I mean, that is what killed Houston the other day. You know, a great team like Houston relies on the three-point game. If they're not shooting threes well, they're done. And there's a whole bunch of teams like that. If they're not shooting the three, well, they're done. So,
yeah,
look out for
three. But I think you're right about coaching. I mean, that and again, that's why Michigan State, you know, jumped out at me. I mean, that guy always I don't know. I mean, again, I don't have them going super far, but just pointing out that they're dangerous.
I think it also makes Auburn a better March Madness team than you might otherwise think, because they have a solid coach with lots of experience.
Agreed.
Willing to do whatever it takes to win.
Yeah.
And great even coaches.
Sorry. All right. Anything else on March Madness? Brackets in. I mean, we'll be talking about it for the next couple of weeks, but get your brackets in. But then we got games starting tomorrow night with the first four, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Let's go.
All right. Well, if it's March Madness, that means it's also SMQB March Madness. And we've got our baseball movies, greatest baseball movies of all time bracket that we got to get through this week. We are in the quarterfinals here. All right, I'm going to lay out our who's playing who, and then we'll go take them one at a time. One versus eight. What's that?
This is a big week for this bracket. There could be some upsets.
Yeah, the one versus eight is Field of Dreams versus the Sandlot. Then we have the 12-4, number four Moneyball versus Bad News Bears, 12 seed. We have 3 seed the Nat Pool versus the 6 seed Major League.
That's a shame right there. That's a shame.
And the 2 seed Bull Durham taking on numbers the 7 seed 8 Men Out. I've been provided Hope's picks. So let's get to it. Let's go with Field of Dreams versus the Sandlot. I mean, if you're talking about the greatest baseball movies of all time, I just
let's move on.
You're killing me, Smalls. You're killing me. This is an all-time classic, The Sandlot.
Funny, entertaining, but not greatest. Come on.
Some kids end up loving baseball because of The Sandlot.
Let's move on.
Feel the dreams.
Feel my pain. Feel my pain.
Jesus.
4-1.
I mean,
you're taking Field of Dreams, right?
Am I? Of course.
I'm gonna put a vote in for The Sandlot. I'm just gonna do it.
All right.
All right,
that's 4-1, and the number one seed advances rather easily. Let's get to the 2-7 Bull Durham versus 8 Men Out.
Another no-brainer.
Yeah. 8 Men Are Out.
All right, that's
Kevin Costner is on a roll.
Yeah, yeah.
We got a 5-0.
Might as well put Yellowstone in there now.
Right, come on.
All right, here's the one that I think is going to, the next two I think are going to be a little more interesting. I do have Pope's picks, I told you. So number four,
tiebreaker.
Moneyball versus 12, the Bad News Bears.
Just wow.
This is tough.
By the way, Mel, House, watching Moneyball last weekend. Is what helped me answer one of my Immaculate Grid questions about it. Was Johnny Damon who played
the A's
in the Red Sox.
Always a good pick.
Yeah.
How do you say no to Engelberg? It's the greatest catcher of all time.
Yeah. I think this one's a no brainer with 12 moving on.
Yeah.
It's a huge upset. I mean, Moneyball's a great story. Very interesting.
Really?
Bad News Bears. It's such a classic.
A big upset.
House and I may be biased in that we were young when we saw it, so we have a certain fondness for that movie. But it was a damn good movie.
Who are you taking?
It's a great movie. I wouldn't recommend showing it to your children. It's not a kid's movie, I quickly realized.
By the way, I've already corrupted your children way beyond anything the Bad News Bears can do.
I don't think I can let Preston watch Bad News Bears, but I'm going to go with Bad News Bears. You got it.
Wow. I thought this was going to come down along age lines. It didn't. I'm the only holdout on Moneyball. All right. The 12 seed advances 4-1.
The next one's going to be tough for me.
Yeah. I agree.
All right.
This is so really tough. This next one's really
the
tough.
Natural, the three seed, the natural versus the six seed major league.
I'll just say
the Major League is one of the funniest movies with some of the most classic clips of all time. Yep. It's a great movie for clips, but The Natural, like Rooster, has been my number one seed all along. There's nothing that grabs at your heartstrings in a baseball movie like The Natural. Incredible story, incredible book, incredible movie. I got to go with The Natural here. My vote's with The Natural, with my apologies to Mr. Sheen.
I agree. The Natural's my number one seed, has been all along. I think I would put Major League perhaps as the number three seed, but not beating The Natural.
I don't know, guys. I love The Natural. It's a pure baseball movie, but I gotta go Major League. I mean,
wow.
It's hysterical.
Wow.
If it's a Saturday and I'm channel surfing, I'm going to put it on.
To take your pulse.
I love it. Don't get me wrong. The Natural is a classic movie. I'm going Major League.
So that means because Pope took Major League. So we've got two.
Oh my God.
Wow.
Yes.
That Sadu who cries at commercials took Major League.
Jeez.
Ace is coming down to you.
Oh my God.
Oof. I know. But listen.
But I already know the answer.
The purist cannot take
purist.
Comedy over The Natural.
I mean, you said
don't
it,
do
Milk.
It to Mr. Hobbs.
Milk, you said The Natural is the quintessential baseball movie or something like that. You said something like that. The purist. That's what this is. This is the greatest baseball movies draft. The Natural advances 3-2.
That's way too close.
Wow.
So we've got the one seed Field of Dreams going up against the Bad News Bears.
Oh, I love it.
And then the two seed Bull Durham going up against The Natural.
Oh, wow. This is starting to get real.
Right. We are going to have a fulsome debate.
This is
going to
get interesting.
Yeah. All right.
This is going to get interesting. All right. That's it on that. Now we got to cover, talk a little bit of NFL free agency madness. Rooster, where are we?
Well, this is a topic that's been covered pretty much in depth at this point. So let me just quickly hit some winners and losers. And I'm going to start with just a conversation about the NFC East, since four of the five of us root for teams in the NFC East. Three of our teams, I think, had a pretty decent free agency period, which just accentuates what a shitty job the Cowboys did. And cheers to the Commanders for not only having a good free agency period, but also doing it at the expense of the Cowboys.
Yeah.
By taking a couple of their really good players. So
this might be the only time the three of us can get on the same page.
I think the Commanders,
that's the Cowboys shitting the bed.
I would give the Commanders a B+ for their last week's work. Picking up Ekeler, the center from the Cowboys, Biadasi, the defensive end from the Cowboys, right? Armstrong and others. I would give the Giants a B for stealing Brian Burns from the Panthers and solidifying their offensive line with the likes of Runyon and Ely Munor. However you pronounce his name. They picked up Drew Locke and Devin Singletary, who has had a couple of good seasons. I think the Eagles get an A for the legend, getting a good safety in Garner Johns, and picking up a starting quarterback as their backup and pickup. You put Saquon on the Eagles, and that puts them out of reach, I think, of the rest of the division. Other teams that I think did exceptionally well are the Packers, picking up Josh Jacobs and McKinney, who I think was the best available safety in football right then. The Falcons improved themselves considerably with Cousins at quarterback. They've had shit at quarterback for as long as we can remember, since basically Matty Ice lost the Super Bowl to the Pats. They've had nothing at quarterback. And they got a damn good receiver in Mooney from the Bears. I love the Chiefs picking up Hollywood Brown. When is the last time the Chiefs, since Tyreek left, had a speedster who didn't drop most of the time the ball hit him in the hands, right? Hollywood Brown's, and they picked up a guy who could be the best punter in all of football, the guy who came off of that investigation, Matt Ariza.
Yeah,
Matt. That's right.
Matt. I know, Milk, you think the Browns did a good job picking up Jameis Winston. They got Jerry Jeudy, who I think is overrated. I just think Jerry Jeudy has never had a good season. I love Derrick Henry on the Ravens.
Oh, and my God.
Finally, the Texans, man. They put Danielle Hunter across from Will Anderson. Holy smokes. That's a hell of an addition, right? The Texans are continuing to get better, and I expect them to be in the playoffs again. I like their moves. I just really have to question what in the hell's going on with the Broncos, who now have no quarterback, the Cowboys, who have done nothing, the Chargers, who have taken away their star quarterbacks, two starting wide receivers, the Vikings, who picked up Sam Darnold as their starting quarterback. Come on, man. Ooh. This is the guy who sees ghosts out there while he's trying to figure out who to throw the ball to. And the Steelers take two quarterbacks. I don't know why they, and I think they have the order wrong. I think they're going to sit Justin Fields and let him watch Russell Wilson, which is surprising to me.
They should cover his eyes when Russell Wilson is there. They should specifically make him look the other way so that he's not picking up bad habits.
I don't know,
I like what the Steelers did. I really do. I think, first of all, they picked up Patrick Queen on defense. They have
that was a good pickup.
Patrick Queen and TJ Watt, they already had a very good defense. They had nothing at quarterback. They were at Kenny Pickett, who I'm not thrilled that we got, although we got him for cheap. They got Kenny Pickett and Mason Rudolph. They've replaced that. I think we can all agree, whatever we think of Russ and Justin Fields, those are two huge upgrades. They're not paying very much for them in compensation, either money or draft picks. And one or the other should work out. If they both don't work out, they haven't paid very much to take the experiment. So overall, I like what the Steelers did. The Chargers, it is not that crazy. Don't be surprised if Harbaugh decides to start over with that team and say, I'm going to trade up. I'm going to get JJ McCarthy. I'm going to trade away Herbert. I got no running back in the backfield in Eckler. I've got no wide receivers. I'm cash strapped, and I'm wasting away with Herbert here. Why not rebuild my team and start with a young quarterback? I don't think it's that crazy.
You think they're going to trade Herbert?
I think there's that possibility. He took a step back
before the draft
last year. Yeah, I think he's maxed out on his value right now. I think Herbert is now where Justin Fields was last year. I think the Bears made a mistake holding on to Fields too long when they could have got rid of him for so much more. I think this is the max value you'll ever get for Herbert. How good is Herbert going to look this year throwing to nobody? And then what are you going to do?
Hold on. What?
That's a porch take right there.
Getting rid of Mike Williams a bad thing? That guy's constantly hurt. He never plays. And Keenan Allen, you guys always joke that he's old as shit.
But he's still in the top five.
Then he got hurt last year too. Everyone seems to be
down to Quentin Johnson.
He's like a rookie, right?
He is a rookie.
He was last year, yeah.
And Josh Palmer's not bad, right?
No, he's bad.
Mike Williams is who cares about Mike Williams?
Harbaugh's going to have to decide what kind of stamp he wants to put on that team, and it will not surprise me if he does something really that blows people away here.
Yeah, wow. I mean, I could see that.
Yeah, maybe he's interested in Danny Dimes. That would be nice.
Yeah, I would be very happy to take Justin Herbert in Washington.
Yeah.
How much are you willing to give up from a draft pick value? Would you trade the number two pick for him?
Yep.
You think you would?
Oh, yeah.
I think so. Yeah.
Definitely. Well,
you could, that could happen. And if I'm the Chargers, I would trade Justin Herbert and start over with Jaden Daniels.
If you were Washington, you wouldn't make that trade?
I would every day.
Yeah.
I'm not as enamored with Herbert as you guys are.
I think Justin Fields got a raw deal, by the way. I think that
the only thing I'll say about go ahead, Russo.
Wait, I want to hear about this Fields part.
Justin Fields was drafted by a different GM head coach than the GM who's there now. The new one came in and had a job to do, which was to rebuild the Bears in the long term. And if he wanted to do that, he couldn't just prop up Justin Fields with starting wide receivers and expensive linemen. So Justin Fields was running for his life for the last 2 years with mediocrity to throw the ball to until they got the dude from the Panthers. You put that guy behind a good offensive line with good wide receivers. I think he's got potential, and he should be starting in front of Russell, because Russell, we've seen what he's got, and you know, he had it at one time and it's gone.
But did Russell Wilson play that bad last year? Like, I know that
I think his stats were pretty good, but
I don't think he played very. The thing about
he was in a really bad environment.
The thing about Fields is that, and I've heard a few people say this, because I was, you know, very much in favor of Washington trading for Fields. But it was like Washington got better value for Sam Howell than Chicago did trading Fields, arguably. And people were like, you know, there's 32 teams in the league. There's a reason that nobody, you know, you have 32 professional evaluators for teams looking at this guy, and nobody wanted to take a chance on him. Something like there's something that he's, I don't know, something doesn't click for him and everybody sees it.
Part of that, though, is this is a cutthroat business. And when you come out and you make clear that you're trying to move him by calling people saying, hey, what will you give me for Justin Fields? And basically give away the fact that you're going to draft Caleb. And then you come out and you announce, we need to do right by this kid. You know, we're going to move him even if we don't get great value for him. The rest of the buzzards out there are going to be like, okay, we'll wait your ass out. We'll wait until you're desperate.
Yeah.
He's better than, he's better than a bunch of these guys who just got picked up. You want Minshew over Justin Fields?
He could be a starter by midseason.
Jimmy G
as much as I like Justin Herbert, I think it's very unlikely that Washington will trade for him. It's very clear in Washington that they want to draft the guy and start fresh. And you know, everything they've done, all the pickups they've made are 1 to 2 year pickups. I mean, they still have like $60 million in cap space for this year. So they'll be active in doing some other stuff too. I am nervous about that two pick. I'll tell you that. I mean, you know, Jaden Daniels, 206 pounds. I mean, we played that game in Washington with RG3, and you know, Drake May, who I know House hates.
Him. I just think he's overvalued it too. I do not hate him.
Well, I don't know. So
I mean, we're going to save this conversation for when we get ready for the draft preview, but it's going to come down to this long discussion of best available or need player. And I think we should have a great chat about, you know, picking a quarterback to get a quarterback. I think we just saw that basically almost every quarterback select in the 2021 draft is gone or a backup,
right?
You know, all picked in the first round. And have all set, as Milk says, you know, getting that wrong can set back your team 4 or 5 years at least.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. Anything else on free agency?
Last thing I'll say, I wouldn't I don't think the Justin Herbert story is over yet, because when you think about Harbaugh, I don't think Justin Herbert. If you think about it, the quite type, I mean, he's totally not a Harbaugh type of quarterback. If you think about the history, I mean, he wants someone running, Alex Smith, Cap, all these guys that he's had in the past, Jip McCarthy. It's not Herbert. It's kind of the opposite of what he usually gets. So I don't know. I kind of thought they were going to take Fields. That Fields seems like the more type of Harbaugh type of quarterback. Harbaugh.
So we'll all see. Right. Who's got a punch? Don't call it a comeback.
I do.
Okay, good. I was afraid we were going to come up short there.
Do you guys know about this stupid Patriots documentary that's being done called Dynasty? Did you hear about this?
Yeah. Now they're all dumping on Belichick.
Okay. These
punch Brady.
You wouldn't believe who's one of the producers of Dynasty. One Thomas F. Brady, and you know what the F stands for. So as part of the Dynasty, you can look this up and listen for yourself. So you guys know the backstory that Brady never shook Foles' hand after Super Bowl 52. It eats at him to this day that he got beat by BDN. He cannot stand having lost to Nick Foles. So as part of the Dynasty, they show the Philly special. Well, in the actual recording of the television on the Philly special, you know, they talk about how it goes to snap to Clement and then they hand it to Burton, and Burton throws to Foles for a touchdown. The Patriots edited out throws to Foles. They goes and throws for a touchdown. They won't even say Foles' name in this documentary. And for that, there is the biggest effing uppercut punch to this team, this organization, Brady's face. You big losers. You can't handle it. You cannot handle losing to the birds. Suck it.
You know, the other thing that's coming out of that documentary is you recall that in that Super Bowl, they sat their Super Bowl MVP cornerback, Butler. And to this day, there's never been an explanation for why Belichick sat him. And the whole team is pissed about it still. Ex-players, including Gronk and others, saying it was just some sort of personality thing. Butler claims he doesn't know why he got sat. And now the owner, Kraft, is saying that cost us that Super Bowl.
Of course. Yeah. If only they'd have played just like Brock Purdy.
Because Foles was torching.
I mean, that is interesting. I mean, I think you secondary. You do. Yeah, you know, thinking about that, you might want to put a little asterisk next to that.
Yeah, Super Bowl, I think so. Right?
Yeah, okay.
It's the Belichick gift.
All right.
Yeah. All right. He's got a lasso.
Barbecue sauce.
I have one. You guys ever heard of Abby Hsu, spelled H-S-U? She is a basketball player for the Columbia women's basketball team. She could have played. She probably would have been recruited by bigger programs. But when she was a junior in high school, she blew out her knee, which meant that when the shooting at her high school, Parkland High School, went down, she had to escape on crutches. So she wound up going to play for Columbia, and then her freshman year was canceled due to the pandemic. While she was home with no school because of the pandemic, her dad, who was a physician in Florida, was the first doctor in Florida to die from COVID-related symptoms. So jeez. That's how this poor girl started out her college basketball career. She's ended it up as the, I believe she's now a fifth year senior because of COVID, and she's the first ever. She's led Columbia to their first ever NCAA tournament. She's scored over 2,000 points and is the leader or the fourth ranked scorer in Ivy League history. And she's likely to be drafted into the WNBA. So she's overcome her knee injury and her tragedies in life and really, really done well for herself. So congratulations to the Abby, and I hope to see her in the NBA next year, WNBA.
Love it.
Good one. Yeah, good one. That is, I didn't know that. What a brutal story.
That's, ugh.
All right, any other lassos? Who's got a buzzer beater?
Nope.
I got one. This just came out, actually, like an hour ago. So I thought we should mention it. Have you heard about this payroll error in San Francisco?
No.
Some accounting nerd has just got fired today. Apparently, the 49ers have forfeited a 2025 draft choice and will drop four spots in next year's draft because of an administrative payroll accounting error. The NFL announced on Monday.
Wow.
Apparently, the NFL discovered a payroll accounting error at the end of the 2022 league year that resulted in a misreporting of the team's cumulative player compensation.
Oh.
So were they over the cap? The NFL determined that the club would have remained under the salary cap at all times, regardless of the error, and there was no intent to circumvent the cap. But they still will lose a draft choice in 2025 and will drop four spots in 2024.
Oh, I have a quick one. It's St. Patrick's Day related.
Yeah, baby.
247 Sports as of today lists Notre Dame as having the number one 2025 recruiting class. And yesterday on St. Patrick's Day, they signed Jerome Bettis' son.
I saw that.
Wide receiver.
Three-star
wide receiver, which is cool to see Jerome Bettis Jr. on that team.
We are really old. 247 Sports? Is it maybe 24/7 Sports?
247. That's what I call it.
Still one more punch.
He's still learning college football.
Hal, you got a buzzer beater?
People didn't see the FA Cup quarterfinal yesterday between Man U and Liverpool. It is one of the great games.
We're losing you, House.
We're losing you, House.
Down Liverpool in incredible.
We lost him, but sounded good. Liverpool did something.
It was soccer related.
It was soccer related anyway.
Yeah.
So whatever.
Let's edit that out and paste in Pope's entire bracket analysis.
Yeah. We got Formula One back on the calendar in Australia this weekend. So check that out. The Australian Grand Prix starts in 3 days, 3 hours, and 50 minutes. We'll get started. That's it. Anybody got anything else for the week?
Can you guys hear me?
Just
on the Formula One story, just as a follow-up to a recent buzzer beater or discussion, the latest is that Jos Verstappen was romantically involved with the woman who is the whistleblower.
Oh, this is getting good.
Wow.
Yeah.
As the world turns, baby.
This is
the
plot.
Wow.
Goodness gracious.
Now this is getting good.
Yes.
All right, guys.
I last thing. Let me say one more thing. Because you guys know my position on the NBA, but I went to an NBA game last week in Denver. My kids are obsessed with the Nuggets now. As a result of that, I actually tuned into a Nuggets game yesterday. First time I've watched an NBA game on a weekend in probably 25 years. And there was an amazing ending to the game. Kyrie Irving hit this ridiculous shot, and it was cool.
Hey, you know, when my son was in college in Boulder, we would go to Nuggets games. It is a really fan-friendly venue. It's a fun place to watch a basketball game.
Awesome. They do a lot of fun stuff for the kids and stuff.
Yep.
It was cool. Good stuff.
All right. Milk is an NBA fan. How about it?
I know a couple players now.
By the way, you might also notice Milk's got a little skier's tan going on here.
Yeah,
I saw the videos of your kids snow plowing down the hill. It looks like they enjoyed it, right?
Yeah,
that was Milk doing somersaults down right behind them, right? Just tumbling.
Yeah.
All right, guys. March Madness is here. Have a good week. Best week in sports, arguably.
The SMQBs are Brian Bandwagon Pope, who hails from Dallas, Texas, and has never met a first place team that he didn't have a personal connection to. Michael Rooster Phelan, hailing from Richmond, and who roots for teams from New York, or is it Boston? I can't remember which it was. One or the other. Also, Patrick Milk Michler from Tampa Bay. And he is still massively in love with Tom Brady and will never get over his man crush on the GOAT. Toby House Milrod, a long-suffering sports fan hailing from Philadelphia, whose Eagles team, they're still looking for another quarterback. And I am Chris Bison Nace, hailing from Washington, District of Champions. Thanks for listening.